Mace didn't even have to leave the command bunker to watch everything start to go wrong. The command bunker was a large, heavily armored hexagon in the middle of the spaceport's control center, filled with angled banks of consoles. Carr Vaster and his ACT guards paced the perimeter of the room, restless as the wild animals they so nearly were. In the darkest corner of the room stood an armored console, separated from the rest. It wore a code-locked cowl of Durasteel to prevent tampering. This console was a late addition to the command center, having been installed by specialists from the Techno Union at the same time they had modernized the spaceport defenses. It was called the Mutiny Box, and contained individual triggers for each of the destruct charges built into every turbo laser and ion cannon, every strong point and anti-starfighter turret. It seemed the Confederacy did not trust that the justice of its cause was sufficient to ensure the loyalty of its troops. In the shadow of this console, on a makeshift pallet made of seat cushions ripped from nearby chairs, lay Deepa Bilaba, nearly blind with pain. She had been weakening ever since the seizure of the command center, and now she lay with one arm covering her eyes. Troopers manned all the essential stations in the command center. Mace stood at the satellite console. At one shoulder stood Nick, breathing out a continuous whisper of obscenities. At his other was the stolidly motionless presence of CRC-09/571. 7-1. The clone commander's voice crackled through his helmet speaker.
Sir.
Get the lander's engines hot, all of them.
We never shut them down, sir.
All right. Mace's habitual frown deepened. If we go, we'll need to give them plenty of targets. Nick stopped cursing long enough to ask, Are we leaving? Mace shook his head grimly, still staring into the screen. No time. It showed the airspace over Pelic Baw.
It's that bad?
Nick spread his hands.
I mean, you've got a plan, right? You've got some trick to get us out of here.
No more tricks, May said. The sky was full of droid starfighters. Incoming.
How long do we have?
May shook his head again. 7-1. We hold the ranking militia officer, yes?
Yes, sir. Major Stemple.
Get him.
What good is he gonna do us?
Mace pointed to a console a few meters away. You see that? That is linked by landline to a secure transmitter beneath this bunker, which is the only one on this planet that can send orders to those starfighters. That's the reason this bunker is a bunker. Whoever called them in had to be here. Nick nodded, understanding.
The control code.
CRC-09/571 returned, accompanied by two troopers who held between them an ashen-faced, trembling man in the sweat-stained uniform of a militia major.
Major Stemple, I am Mace Windu, he began, but the shaking man cut him off.
I know what you want, but I can't help you. I don't know it, I swear. I never knew it. The codes are on a data pad. It's just a big personal data pad in an armored shell. He carries it with him. I didn't even know what he was doing. He just ordered me to relay his signal through the DSF control console.
Mace closed his eyes and put his hand to his forehead.
Of course. I should have expected this,
he muttered to himself.
I keep forgetting that he's smarter than I am.
He? He who?
Nick demanded.
Priority signal incoming,
the trooper at the comm board announced.
He says his name is Colonel Gepton. He's asking for you, General. He's calling to accept your surrender.
An immense, bluishly translucent Lors Gepton smiled his well-fed lizard smile down into the command bunker from the main holoprojector view.
General Windu, when last we met, I had no idea I was entertaining such a distinguished Jedi Master. Not to mention famous. It's an honor, sir. How was your trip upcountry?
I take it, said Mace Windu, that you did not get my message.
Message? Oh, the message. Yes, yes, quite. My Jedi problem and all. Very thoughtful. Most appreciated.
Then you didn't believe it.
Should I have?
You had the word of a Jedi Master.
Ah, yes. Honor, duty, justice. The flavor of the month. I can't imagine why I wouldn't simply take the word of a Jedi Master. Really, what could I have been thinking? By the way, how is Master Belaba? Hasn't found the mass murders of our citizens to be a strain on her health, has she?
You said something about surrender. Gepton's lips pressed together as though he tasted something sour.
This is your situation. There are several hundred droid starfighters over your position. Anything that takes off from the spaceport will be shot down without warning. Anything airborne throughout the capital district, in fact. Meanwhile, by the way, have I complimented you on your maneuver at the Lorshan Pass? Brilliant, Master Jedi. Truly a work of art. You must be quite the Djarik player.
His pale eyes sparkled gleefully.
I have been known to indulge in the game myself. Perhaps, should our discussion today end profitably for us both, we might have a match sometime.
Isn't that what we've been doing? Without a sideways glance or change of expression, May sent a pulse in the Force down the connection he had forged with Nick Rostu. The young Corrin's eyes widened, then narrowed. His face went blank, and he turned away to speak softly to a nearby trooper.
In a way, Master Jedi, in a way. So, where was I? Yes, meanwhile, back at the pass. I have 25,000 regulars on the ground. And while your clever bit of droid baffling cost me almost 50 gunships, I have some left. Several, in fact. Of which 20 or so are already at the Lorshan Pass and have already made a bloody mess of your landers and your defensive perimeter. I'm told your surviving troopers still hold the mouth of the tunnel, but of course they won't for long. I imagine their next move will be to mine the tunnel and collapse it like you did the others. Which works for me. I have sappers clearing the other tunnels already. We'll be inside within the hour.
An hour?
Ah, no, you misunderstand. I am plagued by unreliable subordinates. Perhaps you can sympathize. My troops are not so disciplined as yours. They are young men, after all, and their blood is up. It may take them an hour to get inside. It may take them 10 minutes. Once they enter those caves, I should be very much surprised if any Corrin leaves that place alive.
Mace lowered his head.
Don't take it too hard, General. In Djarik, part of true mastery is recognizing when a game is lost.
He cleared his throat delicately.
You have, sad to say, only one move left. To resign.
Give us a little time. Defeat had leaked into his voice. We will have to talk it over.
Time, of course. Take as long as you like. It's been a pleasure playing against you, Master Windu. Gepton, out.
The image on the huge wall screen faded. Silence shrouded the room. Mace lifted his head. Nick Rostu looked up from the console where he has stood huddled with a pair of troopers, and his eyes sparkled. Got him. The Ministry of Justice. Pegged him with his own bloody satellites. Twilight. Turbo laser batteries cast building-sized shadows across the darkening plain of Permacrete. Silent clones sat behind the plated shields of anti-starfighter duels and quads. The only sound was a soft whine of servo motors as computer-tracked cannons traced the motion of droid starfighters still too high to be more than a bright speck in the setting sun. A tiny noise, a half-swallowed whine of pain and frustration, brought Mace's attention up from the gunship's pre-flight checklist. Chalk was struggling with the nav chair's seat straps. Her tightly bandaged wounds wouldn't let her twist far enough to reach the length control.
Her face had gone so pale that her freckles stood out like grease splatters, and a streak of blood reddened the sheath of bandages around her chest.
Here, let me.
Mace adjusted the strap length and buckled her in. He frowned at the blood on her bandages.
When did this happen?
Chuck shrugged, avoiding his eyes. On the jump, maybe? At the pass.
You should have said something.
Don't have time to be hurt me. She nodded up through the oval lightsaber-cut gap in the windscreen. Far above the city, the setting sun struck sparks from the impossibly complex shimmerfly dance of the droid starfighters.
Are in danger, people. People I love can hurt later me.
When this is over, he said, nodding his understanding, you and I will check into a hospital together.
The smile she gave him showed only a trace of pain. Nick poked his head through the cockpit doorway.
Looks like we're a go.
Hey, look at this,
he said with a sudden frown, staring out through the windscreen. Through the shadows, slashing the landing field, loped Carr Vastor. His shields flashed eye-stinging highlights from the glow panel day floods that now, with sunset passing, shone upon the ships. He waved as he ran, clearly asking Mace to wait for him.
What, does he want to fight again or something?
Nick brightened.
You know, we could just shoot him. Accidentally, like. One of those senseless weapons check tragedies.
Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
Without expression, Mace watched Vastor approach. Only moments ago, just before he left the command bunker to come out here, he had pulled aside CRC-09/571 for a private conversation.
Your orders come only from me, do you understand?
He had told the clone commander.
I want you to be absolutely clear on that.
7-1's helmet had tilted to a quizzical angle.
But Master Balaba
has been relieved of her duties and placed under arrest, as has Carr Vastor.
Would the General like them disarmed and restrained?
No, I'm not sure you can. But watch them. They are not to be trusted.
And if there is a confrontation, sir?
CRC-09/571's dry voice had slowed, as though the commander were reluctant to even consider the possibility.
If they attack?
Defend yourself, your men, and the prisoners,
Mesa told him.
Use all necessary force.
Out on the landing field, Vastor didn't bother to come around toward the troop bay doors. Without breaking stride, he burst into a force leap that carried him up to the Turbostorm's nose below the cockpit with a clank that must have been his deactivated vibro shields getting in the way of his grab for the nose armor. He climbed up into view, settling himself into a crouch on the nose armor outside the windscreen. He squatted there for a moment, forearms resting on his bent knees, staring gravely at Mace through the opening.
Mace, Jedi of the Windu.
Even his growl was reluctant, almost contemplative.
Carr. We have not been friends, you and I. If we both survive this day, I suspect that again we will not be friends.
Mace only nodded.
We may not meet again. I would have you know that I am glad I did not kill you this afternoon. No one else could have done what you have done today. No one else could have brought us so far.
This also did not call for a reply. Mace waited.
I would have you know that I am proud to be your Doshalo. You are a credit to the Windu.
Mace took a deep breath.
You aren't.
It was Vastor's turn to silently stare.
I am not Mace, Jedi of the Windu. Windu is my name, not my Gosh. You and I are not Doshalai. The Windu are no more, and what you have done disgraces their memory. My Gosh, said Mace Windu, is the Jedi.
He went back to his pre-flight checklist.
It would be good, he said distantly, if you were to be gone when I get back.
Until we meet again, Doshalo.
He spun like a startled branch leopard and sprang down from the turbostorm's nose to sprint away across the flood-lit permacrete. Mace didn't bother to watch him go. He flicked the last 10 switches into flight sequence, and the turbostorm rocked gently as its repulsor lifts brought it up to an altitude of just under a meter.
Let's go.
By the time the turbostorm roared through the spaceport gates into the warehouse district of Pelic Baw, it was already doing over 200 kilometers an hour. Nick held onto the backs of Mace's and Chalk's chairs, squinting doubtfully up through the windscreen's gap.
You know, if you don't mind my asking, are you sure those DSFs won't come down for ground vehicles as well?
I'll show you.
Mace heeled the turbostorm over, using its thrusters to help negotiate a tight corner. It bounced jarringly off a warehouse hard enough to dent its armor and knock a steam crawler-sized hole in the building's wall. Half a click ahead, the gigantic slope-armored hulk of a ground assault vehicle clanked out from a side street. May said,
"That's how."
Its turret was already rotated the quarter turn to bear on the turbostorm, and May said,
"Chalk."
But she was ahead of him. The quad turrets on both sides of the gunship burst to life and filled the street with streaking packets of energy, which crashed into the GAV without even scratching it. Nick was shouting,
"You'll never breach that armor!"
while Chalk was letting her gaze defocus and her hands relax on the split yoke.
"Not shooting at his armor, me,"
she murmured, and she held down the triggers as the GAV's cannon bucked with the launch of an armor-piercing shell.
That met a laser blast, nose first, while still inside the barrel.
The explosion was satisfying. It left the cannon's barrel peeled back on itself in a spray of blackened Durasteel twists, making the GAV look like a droid smoking an exploding cigar.
"Okay," Nick said. "Now I'm impressed."
The GAV's gunners opened up with its heavy slug repeater, making riding in the turbostorm resemble having one's head inside a Durasteel trash barrel that's being clubbed by a pack of drunken monkey lizards. May said, "Time to get off the street." He yanked the control yoke to slew the turbostorm sideways. A huge mouth, teeth of duracrete dangling from reinforcing bars, suddenly gaped in the blank wall of the warehouse beside them, and Mace rammed the gunship through the gap, inside the building.
"Yow!"
Nick said. Cargo containers flashed by them to either side, lit red by the blaze of fire from their guns. Then another cannon-blasted mouth opened in the opposite wall, and they broke out into the next street over, which was also full of militia.
At least a company of heavy infantry, with a couple of mobile artillery pieces, and possibly more out there that Mace didn't have time to identify,
because he just kept the gunship roaring straight on through the middle of them and into the warehouse across the street, before any of the astonished Balawai could so much as charge their weapons.
Sometimes, when things go wrong, they go wrong one at a time. A chain of misfortune that must be dealt with link by link. Those are the easy times. Sometimes troubles come in a starburst. When they had finally broken free from the warehouse district, Mace brought the gunship down to a walking pace.
"Nick, do you know where we are?"
"So much for the element of surprise."
"Nick."
Nick shook his head dejectedly.
"Don't you get it? They know we're coming now. The Ministry of Justice is like a fortress. Hell, it is a fortress. Not even you can get in there. Not now. Now they'll be ready for us."
May said, "They always were."
"That's all right. We're not going there."
"Huh?"
"Gepton is smart. Possibly too smart for his own good. He knows we'll come for him. It's the only move we have.
That's why we tracked his signal so easily. He wants us to hit the Ministry of Justice. If he were really in the Ministry, he could have found a way to mask his signal. There won't be anything there except a very large number of troops, or possibly only a very large bomb.
Then what are we fraggin' doing out here? Where is he?
A place with electronics sophisticated enough to fake the origination data of a comm signal, May said. I may not be the Dejarik player our colonel is, but there's nothing wrong with my memory. The one time we met, it was on the occasion of the death of someone he described as an old friend. Nick's eyes narrowed.
Tank, he breathed. You think he's at the Washateria?
I'm sure of it. Can you get us there?
Sure. Simple. All you gotta do is bear northeast.
He was interrupted by Chalk's hand on his arm. She gave him a sickly smile, and her throat worked as though she was struggling not to retch.
Maybe better.
She coughed wetly. Blood spattered from her lips.
Chalk!
Her fingers dug into his arm, a spasm.
Maybe better take Nav you,
she said, and slumped. Her hand fell away from her ribs, revealing a ragged hole below her breast. She crumpled forward against the Nav chair's safety straps. In her back was an exit wound Nick could have put his fist into. Nick threw his arms around her, holding her head up, pleading with her empty eyes.
Chalk! No! Not you! Come on! Not you too! Come on, Chalk, please!
Mace looked at the windscreen, at the line of rainbow ring slug dents from that first GAV. A line punctuated by the lightsaber cut gap. She had taken that slug minutes ago. Without a word, without a sound, she had held on, had fought on.
The medical center!
Nick's voice had gone thick. Just tell me which way to go.
Okay. Go left at the corner, then...
The street in front of them erupted like a chain of volcanoes. Explosions at the terminal points of scarlet particle beams that rained upon them from the night sky. Aimed not at the street, but at a hurtling dark shape that twisted through a barrel roll over the buildings before it took a direct hit and tumbled into a ball of debris-spewing fire that slammed an apartment block only a few dozen meters short of the turbo storm. The blast picked up the gunship and spun it down the street. Of the unarmored ground cars and the pedestrians, the taxi carts and street vendors, the elderly on their stoops, and the children who had darted playfully around the tall light poles. Nothing was left but smoking rubble, twisted metal, and burned meat.
What in the...
Nick reeled off an impressive string of obscenities.
Was that?
May the Force give me strength,
Mace whispered, as close to a curse as he had ever come. That hurtling dark shape had been one of the in-comm skyhoppers from the spaceport. The cannon fire that had rained on the street and brought down the skyhopper had come from droid starfighters. The night sky was full of ships, above the city.
Oh, Deepa,
Mace breathed. The sheer scale of the catastrophe staggered him. More than 400,000 people lived in Pelek Baw. Drawing fire from the starfighters down upon it could put the entire capital to the torch. The Skyhopper wasn't the first ship to crash into the crowded streets of the capital tonight. And there were over 100 more, from tiny racing yachts to immense freighters.
Deepa, what have you done?
The comm panel chimed to announce an incoming voice and visual. Scanning lasers in the comm unit traced a blue-lined image shadow on the windscreen. An electronic pre-echo of the larger-than-life hollow image projected in the burning night outside. An image of a huge Corrin with a shaven head and a smile like a mouthful of bone needles. He growled, and Mace wondered how Vastor could expect to be understood. His force-powered semi-telepathy wouldn't modulate a comm signal, but this little mystery instantly solved itself.
Thank you for giving us the city, Doshalo.
His smile spread like flames on oil.
We have decided to redecorate.
Mace opened his mouth to ask for CRC-09/571 and closed it again. The commander had been warned not to take orders from them. They must have killed him.
Carr, where's Deepa?
Mace held his desperate horror locked deep inside his chest.
Let me talk to her.
She doesn't want to talk to you. She doesn't want to see you, ever. I have arranged matters so she won't have to.
Carr, stop this. You have to stop this.
And I will, when everyone is dead.
You don't understand what you're doing.
Yes, I do. And so do you.
He did understand. Finally, too late. He had no words for what he felt. Perhaps there are no words.
I call to say goodbye, Doshalo. Deepa will remember you fondly, as will we all. It is a hero's death you go to, Mace of the Windu.
Mace showed his own teeth. I'm not dead yet. Vaster's blue-imaged head tilted a centimeter to the right.
What time is it?
Mace froze. A metallic clank echoed in his memory.
Nick!
Mace's sudden shout shocked the young Corran like a shot from a stun baton.
Hang on!
The arming levers on the seat ejectors flipped up. Nick swore and threw his arms around Chalk half a second before the triggers pressed themselves and explosive bolts blew the windscreen up and out and his chair shot toward the rooftops, out of balance and tumbling into the night sky as the time fuse on the proton grenade Vaster had mag-clamped to the Turbostorm's nose, precisely where its shaped charge would blow a dozen kilos of shredded armor plate through the cockpit sideways, detonated. Mace found them by following his force link with Nick. Double-loaded and out of balance, the chair had carried them only as far as a black rooftop, flat and sticky with tar, before crashing to spill them across it. Nick's silent silhouette knelt with bowed head beside her. His hand gently stroked bloody tangles of hair away from her face. Tears from his eyes fell to her cheeks, as though death had finally allowed this tough girl to weep. Mace stood at the roof's rim and looked out across the city. His chair had carried him a dozen blocks away. He had come here on foot. The streets were a nightmare. Cannon fire rained at random. Missiles that had lost their targets blasted ground cars and street vendor stalls. People ran and screamed. Pelic Baw had always been a jungle, but only in a metaphoric sense. Vaster had brought the real one. He was the real one. And he was eating this city alive.
I always used to.
Nick's voice was soft. He still knelt over her.
I used to, you know, kind of think, you know, maybe someday when I leave this fragging planet.
He shook his head helplessly.
I always kind of thought she'd be coming with me.
Nick, I'm sorry. I cannot tell you how sorry I am.
Yeah.
Nick nodded slowly, pensively, as though each motion of his head welded another layer of armor around his grief. Then he sucked air through his teeth and shoved himself to his feet. Lots of people are sorry tonight. He had her gun belt in his hands. He moved to the roof rim to stand beside Mace and look out across the burning city. They're all against us now, he said softly. Not just the militia and the droids.
Yes.
He buckled Chalk's gun belt around his waist and tied her holster down to his left thigh to match his own on his right. He drew her gun, smooth and fast, checking its heft and balance. He popped the clip and snapped it back in.
You know, Carr saved her life.
He spun the pistol forward, then reversed it so that its own spin slipped in snugly into the holster. He stared down into the pandemonium on the street. An armored ground car filled with militia swung around a corner.
Nick said softly, "You got any idea what we're gonna do?"
Before Mace could speak, Nick smiled tiredly and raised a hand.
"Don't bother. I know what you're about to say."
"I don't think you do." Mace gave the militia vehicle below a speculative frown. "We're going to surrender." The Highland Green Washateria was an imposing verdigris-domed edifice of gleaming white tile set off by obsidian grout. When the ground car pulled up to it, its sign was dark, and its elaborate array of arched windows were sealed by durasteel blast shutters. The squad's noncom peered at it dimly through the ground car's windscreen.
"Don't know why the colonel'd be here," he said doubtfully.
"He's here," Mace said from the front seat next to the noncom. "Let's get out."
"I guess he could be here,"
the noncom admitted reluctantly.
"Okay, everybody out."
As the squad piled out into the sidewalk, the noncom muttered, "I still think we should have tried the ministry. And I probably ought to put binders on you, too."
"There's no reason to go to the ministry," Mace said. "And you don't need the binders."
"Aw, frag the binders anyway, okay? Let's go."
He tried the blast-shuttered door.
"Locked."
Purple energy flared. Durasteel sizzled. White-hot edges dulled to red, then darkened entirely. "No, it isn't." The noncom used the barrel of his blaster rifle as a pry bar to swing open the door.
"Hey, what are you guys doing here?"
The broad sculpted lobby of the Washateria had been turned into a heavy weapons nest. A platoon of militia crouched, squatted, or lay behind temporary barriers of expanded permacrete. Tripod-mounted repeaters were leveled at the open door. May said,
"I need to see Colonel Gepton. You know, that's a funny thing."
A big lieutenant squinted past his blaster sights.
"Because he don't want to see you."
"Lieutenant, do you have a family?"
He scowled.
"None of your business."
"Have you looked outside recently?" The big man's jaw tightened. May said,
"I can stop it. Those ships your droids are chasing are piloted by men under my command. But if something were to happen to me..."
The big man's chin drew down stubbornly.
"Your choice is straightforward," May said. "You can follow orders and open fire. Most of you will die, and your families will be left out there, without you, and without any hope other than that their deaths might be quick. Or you can bring me to Colonel Gepton, save hundreds of thousands of lives, including your own. Do your duty, or do what's right. It's up to you."
The big man's knuckles whitened on the blaster. Mace lowered his lightsaber, but kept its blade humming.
"Why don't you call him and ask?
It is possible that he has changed his mind."
The lieutenant's scowl thickened until it broke under its own weight.
"They don't pay me enough for this."
He came out from behind the permacrete barrier and went to the house comm at the hostess desk. A brief conversation went on in undertones. When it was over, he looked even more disgusted. He returned his blaster to its holster and waved his empty hand at his men.
"All right, stand down, everybody. Put him away."
While his men complied, he walked over to Mace.
"I'll need your weapons."
From behind Mace's shoulder, Nick said,
"You don't have to take our weapons."
"Don't quit your day job, kid."
The lieutenant held out his hand.
"Come on. I can't bring you down there armed."
Mace silently handed over his lightsaber. Nick flushed, while he dangled his pistols from one finger through each trigger guard. The entrance to the Republic Intelligence Station was a waterproof hatch. It was disguised as part of the checkered tile pattern on the bottom of a steaming mineral bath, fed by the natural hot springs below the Washateria. The lieutenant led Mace and Nick to a waiting stair from the deck down into the shallow end. A concealed latch opened a code panel that swung down from the stair rail. An electric crackle heralded the opening of a channel. Walls of sizzling energy held back the sulfurously steaming water. Toward the deep end, the channel became a tunnel.
Another code panel opened the waterproof hatch, and open work stairs with drains beneath them led down into a dry, brightly lit room filled with the very latest electronic surveillance, code-breaking, and communications equipment. A handful of people in civilian clothes monitored the various stations like they knew what they were doing. The lieutenant showed them to a small, gloomy chamber with hollow viewer walls and a heavy lamis table in the center. The only light in the chamber came from the hollow viewers. They showed real-time images of the city. The ceiling sparkled with swooping droid starfighters and the hurtling ships they pursued. Burning buildings cast a dull, flickering rose-colored glow that silhouetted a small, plump man seated at the far end of the table.
"Master Windu, please come in."
Gepton's voice was thin, and the self-deprecating chuckle he offered had a fragile edge.
"It appears that I miscalculated."
May said, "We both did."
"I never suspected that Jedi could be capable of such savagery."
"Neither did I."
"People are dying out there, Windu. Civilians. Children."
The colonel sprang jerkily to his feet.
"How can you do this? How can you do this?"
"You are not the only one," May said evenly, with unreliable subordinates.
"Ah."
He sank slowly back into his chair and lowered his head into his hands.
"I understand. I didn't misjudge you. You misjudged your people. This is all your mistake, not mine."
"There will be plenty of guilt to go around. All that is important right now is the power to make it stop."
"And you have this power?"
"No," said Mace Windu. "You do."
"You think I haven't tried? Look at this! You see all this?"
His voice was going shrill. A shadow wave of a trembling hand swept the images on the walls and ceiling.
"These are landline sensors, hardwired. Want to see our remotes?"
He stabbed a control on the tabletop. All four walls and the ceiling fuzzed to eye-stinging white snow.
"See? Don't you see? All our signal jamming controls are at the spaceport, too. Even if you wanted to order your pilots to stand down, you can't. We can't get through. It's out of our hands. We are helpless. Helpless."
May said,
"There is one more thing you can try."
"Enlighten me."
"Surrender."
Gepton's laugh was bitter.
"Oh, certainly. Why didn't I think of that?"
He shook his head.
"Surrender to whom?"
"To the Republic," May said. "To me."
"To you? You're my prisoner, and you're wasting my time. Take them away."
The big man shrugged.
"You heard him,"
the lieutenant began. But he finished the statement with a sudden yelp of surprise and pain when the lightsaber he held ignited in his hand, the blade stabbing downward to drive a smoking hole through his thigh. His hands opened. The blasters clattered to the floor, and the lightsaber flipped into Mace's palm.
"You hold it like this," Mace said.
Sizzling blade poised a centimeter from the end of the big man's nose. The two regulars behind them cursed and fumbled with their rifles. Nick spun to face them and brought up his arms as both his blasters yanked themselves through the air to smack into his hands.
"Let's just not, okay?"
"These are my terms," May said evenly. "The planetary militia will immediately cease all operations in the Lorshan Pass. You will turn over to me the starfighter control codes. And, as the ranking military official and the ranking officer of the Confederacy, you will sign a formal surrender ceding Harun Kaul and the Alhar system itself to the Republic."
Gepton clutched the edge of the table, livid.
"If I don't?"
May shrugged.
"Then I won't save your city."
"How am I supposed to trust that you will? That you even can?"
"You know who I am."
Gepton trembled, and not from fear.
This is extortion.
No, May said. It's war.
The formal surrender had been drafted, witnessed, and signed right there in the intel station.
You know this has no legal standing,
Gepton said, as he affixed his signature and retinal print. I signed the surrender only under duress.
Surrender is always made under duress, Mace observed dryly. That's why they call it surrender.
Mace set the comm gear to automatically make a number of transmissions the instant signal jamming abated enough that communications could resume. Many of the transmissions would be simple orders to the various battalions of militia to lay down their arms. More significant would be a HoloNet report to Coruscant with a copy of the surrender agreement, along with an emergency summons for a Republic task force. Now, all he had to do was control the spaceport. Gepton got them through the militia perimeter that stretched in a thick arc among the burning warehouses. Then Mace stepped out of the ground car.
Nick, you drive.
He shooed away the rest of the militiamen. Gepton started to follow them.
Not you, Colonel. Get in the car.
Me? You can't be serious. What do you expect me to do?
You'll transmit the deactivation codes to make sure nothing goes wrong.
Why should I have to do anything? What will you two be doing?
Nick stared through the windshield at the spaceport gates.
Killing people.
Gepton looked at him, blinking as though he were expecting a punchline. May said,
get in the car.
Gepton walked around to the other side of the ground car.
Here, young man, shove over. I'll drive. You will? You might have to shoot people, yes?
Nick looked at Mace. Mace shrugged, and Nick slid over to the passenger side. Mace ignited his lightsaber. He lifted its blade and stood for a moment, staring into its blaze as though he could read his future there.
Perhaps he could.
That killing flame might be the only future he had. He let it drop to his side, but held it alight, and walked toward the spaceport gates.
Follow me.
Gepton engaged the ground car's drive system and let the armored vehicle roll along behind the Jedi Master's deliberate stride. Mace reached the gate and looked across the empty landing field toward the control center. Empty. Silent. Vast. The day floods threw stark white glare. Mace walked into the spaceport. The ground car rolled in after him. He had no idea what to expect here. He thought he was ready for anything. He was almost right. One thing he didn't expect was the crackle of a helmet speaker from the ground-level hatch of the turbolaser tower to his left.
General Windu! General Windu, is that you?
Three troopers crouched in the doorway. Mace called.
Yes?
Permission to approach, sir.
He waved them over and they came at a run. They snapped to attention in perfect file. Mace stared at the bleak durasteel of the blast door, while the trooper captain, designated CC-8/349, filled him in. The blast door was a full meter thick and locked with internal bolts of neutronium. Its surface was smooth, dull matte gray. From the outside, it was controlled by a code panel. The inside had a manual wheel. When the wheel was engaged, the code panel was useless. A full platoon of heavy assault troopers crouched in a tight arc on the white tile around the blast door, bolting tripods into the floor and charging weapons. Four more platoons waited in reserve, two down either direction of the corridor. Mace had a good idea how the inside of the bunker looked right now. Too good an idea. He felt a surge of dark power spreading across the city like the shock front of a fusion bomb.
Makes you wonder, Nick said slowly. Just what they're doing in there.
May said, they're waiting.
For what?
He looked down at the lightsaber in his hand.
To see if I come back.
Nick seemed to chew this over. He opened his eyes and pulled himself to his feet. He shook his arms loose and hooked his thumbs over his gun belts.
Then I guess we shouldn't disappoint them.
Captain 4-9, Mace said slowly. No one comes out of there but us. Do you understand? No one.
General, we should go in first.
Mace turned to CC-8/349. I will go in first. Your men will enter on my command. Two platoons. Come in shooting. Blast anything that moves. But this is not search and destroy. You're there solely to cover Colonel Gepton. If he fails, nothing else matters.
If I might interrupt?
Gepton coughed delicately.
Has anyone considered just how we are going to get in?
Just like we do everything else, Nick said. The hard way.
Pardon?
Shaped charges, Mace told him. He turned to the trooper captain. Proton grenades. Blow the door.
General!
CC-8/349 stiffened to attention.
With the general's pardon, sir. Commander 7-1 still in there, with more than 20 men. And there are prisoners to consider, sir, including civilians. If we use proton grenades, the casualties...
There is no one in that room except the dead, Mace said heavily, and the people who killed them. He nodded to Nick. Cover my back from the doorway. The young Corin drew Chalk's blaster from his left holster. He held both guns low and loose and nodded back.
Colonel Gepton?
The plump little Balawai pushed himself to his feet. He clamped the armored datapad under one arm, but still held it with both white-knuckled hands.
Ready when you are, Master Jedi.
I can't protect you in there.
Lovely.
You won't be using the console. The transceiver unit itself is in a chamber below the bunker. I will provide access. Stay out here until I call for the troopers.
Certainly. I'm in no hurry, if you take my meaning.
I have never been anything remotely resembling a hero.
People, said Mace Windu, with tragic conviction, change. He ignited his blade. He held it with both hands. All right, Captain. Blow the door. Greasy smoke curled from the shattered blast door. It reeked of blood and human waste, the smell of death. Mace stood next to the door, waiting for the smoke to thin. Bodies were everywhere. Some wore combat armor. Some wore militia khakis. Some wore no uniform at all. Some were missing pieces. Mace's blade hissed in the smoke as he went inside. As a weapon, a lightsaber is uniquely tidy, even in a sense, merciful. Its powerful cascade of energy instantly sears and cauterizes any wound it inflicts. The wounds rarely bleed at all. It is a clean weapon. A vibro-shield is not. The floor in the command bunker was treacherously slippery. Mace trod with care. Behind him, Nick slipped through the doorway and put his back to the wall. All was silence and death.
Deepa, Mace said softly. Car. Come out. I know you're watching me. I can feel you.
Car's answer was a low, silky predator's growl that seemed to come from everywhere at once.
We don't have to be enemies.
Mace brought up his blade. He moved cautiously around the ruins of the monitor bank closest to the doorway.
Aren't we on the same side? We've won the planet for you, haven't we?
Mace reached into the Force, feeling for the emptiness below that would contain the transceiver. With each step, he worked his feet down through tangles of dead arms and legs, seeking solid footing on the floor beneath before taking the next. A low snarl was the only warning he got. Nick's guns roared flame at a hurtling dark shape that leapt from nowhere. Sparks clanged in the gloom as Mace whirled instinctively and slashed at the shape. And it vanished in a dive that carried it over the console bank before he'd even seen what it was. He let his blade shrink away and crouched between two console banks, his heart hammering.
Nick, he called. Did you get him?
don't think so.
Nick's voice came out thin and tight.
Sounded like he took both on the shields. You?
Mace smelled smoke, charred flesh.
Perhaps. A piece of him, anyway.
The low, snarling growl became mocking laughter.
Your force can't help you here. Here, there is only Pelikotan. And we are only Pelikotan's dream.
Mace crept silently along the console bank.
You didn't feel me coming at you. You can't.
That wasn't you, Mace said, low.
But it was. 1/7 of me. Your pardon. 1/8.
He could feel the transceiver chamber now, 2 meters away on the far side of this console bank. Its ceiling began 1.5 meters below the floor.
You have lost her. Lost her to Pelikotan. Lost her to Pelikotan's dream. A world free from Balawai.
Mace muttered, "We are all Balawai here." The spot he needed was just ahead. Someone had been carving the floor there already. Blackened hunks of the command bunker's armor plating lay strewn around a human-sized pit, already nearly 1 meter deep. Beside them, a slim form in tattered brown robes lay crumpled on the floor. Her lightsaber was still in her hand. For one giddy instant, his heart sang. She had anticipated him. She hadn't fallen to the dark. It had been an act, all an act. She had been cutting through the floor to help him. But it was only one instant. He knew better. Of course she had anticipated him. She knew all there was to know about his style. She'd known exactly what his target had to be. And she hadn't been cutting into the chamber below in order to help activate the transceiver. She'd been going there to destroy it. Looked like the proton grenade blast had caught her just in time. She didn't seem to be breathing. In the blinding swirl of dark power that filled the bunker, he could not feel if she still lived.
You have gone very quiet, Doshalo. Do you think silence can save you? Do you think that because you cannot feel me, the reverse is also true?
It didn't seem possible. After all she had been to him for all these many years, that now he could look at her corpse and feel only a vague melancholy relief that he hadn't had to kill her himself.
Do you think there is anything about you I don't know?
I think, May said, that if you were all you claim, I'd already be dead.
He pushed himself into a forward roll that brought him up to a crouch and looked down into the hole. She'd done most of his work for him already. He could cut through with a single stroke.
You are not yet my kill.
No? Whose kill am I, then?
The answer to his question was a lightsaber's emitter jammed against his belly. Mace had time to think blankly.
Oh, not dead. Faking. Deepa?
She screamed as she triggered her blade, and kept screaming as its green fire chewed a tunnel through Mace's guts and speared out his side. His hand seized hers instinctively, locking her blade against his body so that she could not kill him by slashing it free. His own blade ignited. He was going to have to do this the hard way. He struck downward into the pit beside them, his blade slicing out a lopsided ellipse of armor plate that dropped into darkness below and clanged to an unseen floor.
Gepton, he roared. Now!
Flashes of battle. Shadows fleeing the bunker as swarms of screaming electric blue blaster bolts rebounding off walls shoot them to rags. A flood of troopers spreading into a wave through the doorway. Weapons scouting lightning-colored energy. Gepton in the middle of them, head down and running, datapad cradled like a baby in his arms. A buzzing shield of silver flame that slices through a blaster rifle so that it explodes and takes with it the trooper's hands.
These things burned in Mace's brain as he fought for his life against the woman who should have been his daughter. He brought his blade back up from the pit and turned his wrist on the forehand so that his recovery stroke took her in the temple with his lightsaber's butt. Her finger slipped off the blade's activation plate, and it shrank back down through his body. She howled and punched his eye socket with her free hand, but Mace got his foot wedged between them, and he shoved her away with a powerful thrust. At the same instant, both of them backflipped into the air, landing on their feet poised in perfect mirror images, their blades whipping in identically curving slashes, almost too fast to see. Their eyes never left each other's. His blade whirred through the air. Hers whirred faster. She advanced. The slashes never stopped. They would never stop. They flowed one into the next with liquid precision. This constant, near-invisible weave of lethal energy is the ready stance of the Vapad. 24 troopers entered the bunker in a wedge around Colonel Gepton. Nick Rostu kept his back against the wall while he watched them die. ACK guards leapt over and passed them, and with every leap, another clone fell. The clones never stopped, never faltered, firing blaster carbines from the hip, forcing their way forward over the bodies of their comrades. And it wasn't only clones who died. The Force nudged Nick, and he swung a blaster and fired without thinking. A leaping ACK guard whirled, and the slug banged sparks off his shield. But in the instant his attention was diverted, he fell upon the muzzle of a trooper's DC-15, and blue energy exploded out his back. The ACK guard had been a man Nick knew, as he knew them all. This one's name had been Prauk. Another nudge from the Force, and another shot took out the knee of an ACK guard who had his shields buried in a clone trooper's chest. The dying trooper jammed the muzzle of his carbine against the falling guard's throat and fired. This was the guard whose nose Mace had broken. His name had been Fafal. Nick was waiting for his next shot when a massive shadow rose up right in front of him. Intent on the Force, Nick hadn't seen him coming. He said, "Whoops." This one's name was Iolu. He had saved Nick's life during a firefight once. A long time ago. "Hello, Nick," he said, and drove his shield's sizzling edge at Nick's neck. Nick's knees buckled, and he bent backward like a drawn bow. Iolu's fist grazed Nick's nose as the horizontal vibro shield passed over the young Corrin's upturned face and bit into the wall so smoothly that the ACK guard's knuckles hit as well. The unexpected shock loosened his grip on the vibro shield's activator, and its hum died, leaving it stuck fast in the wall. Before Iolu could pull it back out, Nick flipped his pistol's muzzle up against the ACK guard's extended elbow. The slug didn't quite blow his arm off. Iolu swayed, stunned. Chalk's gun in Nick's other hand came up under Iolu's chin. "Never liked you anyway," Nick said, and pulled the trigger. The corpse fell against him. Nick pushed himself sideways out from under, looking for another target, and the dead guard slid down the wall. Gepton was nowhere to be seen. A knot of clone troopers stood back to back, firing desperately at one lone ACK guard who leapt and spun and slaughtered with demonic precision. No, not an ACK guard. It was Carr Vastor. Nick leveled Chalk's gun. "This is for her, scumpacker," he muttered. "Never liked you either." But her pistol was too heavy for him to hold steady. His own seemed to have gained a dozen kilos as well. "What the frag?" His knees turned to cloth. He looked over at Iolu's corpse. The other shield, one that still hung silent along his dead arm, was stained bright red, dripping. Nick said, "Oh." He looked down. A huge diagonal gash opened his tunic across his abdomen, and his legs were soaked with blood. He sagged back against the wall. "Oh," he said again. "Oh, blast." And in the end, he was just too tired, too old, too wounded. The human body has unexpected resources.
One of them is its response phenomenon to battle. When one is fully committed to combat, the body may feel pain and fatigue, but the brain does not. This, however, is a function of one's mental state, that full commitment to combat which is called fighting spirit. When your fighting spirit breaks down, when something, anything, puts a crack in it and it crumbles under the stress of battle, your body does exactly the opposite. Instead of helping you keep on fighting, it gives you reasons to quit. Instead of feeling no pain, you feel nothing but pain. Through the trace of force connection he had with Nick, Mace felt the young Corrin collapse. Something broke inside his head, and all his own wounds crashed upon him. His lightsaber went heavy, and his arms went slow. Deepa burned a stripe across his chest, and he staggered. His fighting spirit wasn't destroyed. It wasn't even far away. He could feel where it had gone. He could reach out and touch it. It was waiting for him in the dark. Lors Gepton quivered uncontrollably. His hands trembled so badly he could barely punch the keys on the code lock that sealed his datapad's armored shell. When he finally got it open, he had to fumble in the inky shadows for the link port on the transceiver, and his shaking hands made inserting his pad's data link resemble threading a needle with his feet. But he got it done. With a gasp of triumph, he keyed the droid starfighter recall sequence. Nothing happened. A moment later, his datapad screen announced, ECM fault. Unable to execute. ECM fault. ECM, electronic countermeasure. The signal jamming was still on. In the Force, Mace felt Gepton's despair. To him, it felt like a gift. Another man might even have smiled. He took one last look at the darkness that called to him. Darkness within mirroring darkness without, and turned away. He let his blade vanish. His arms dropped to his sides. Deepa moved in for the kill. He let himself collapse. He fell to the floor at her feet, and instead of cleaving his skull, her blade slashed the console behind him in half. Cables spat blue sparks in the burned gap. This was the console that controlled the spaceport signal jamming equipment. Down in the transceiver chamber, Gepton stared at his datapad screen with astonished reverence, conscious of having been unexpectedly granted undeserved grace. It read, "Command executed." In the skies over Pelic Baw, as the snow cap on Grandfather's shoulder kindled with the first red rays of dawn, droid starfighters disengaged from clone-piloted ships and streaked back into the depths of space. In the command bunker, the swirl of dark power crested, paused, and began to recede. Mace lay on the floor. He didn't think he could get up. Deepa stared down at him, her face lit jungle green by the glow of her blade, and a single needle of light seemed to pierce the dark madness in her eyes. "Oh, Mace." Her voice was a moan of astonished pain. Her blade vanished, and her arms fell limp and helpless to her sides. "Mace, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." He managed to lift a hand to reach up to her.
"Deepa."
"Mace, I'm sorry," she repeated, and brought her lightsaber up to put its emitter to her own temple. "We shouldn't have come."
"Deepa, no!"
Mace found he did have the strength to rise, to stand, even to leap for her. But he was exhausted and wounded and far, far too slow. She squeezed the activator plate. A single sharp report, like a hand clap, rang out behind him, and a spark flew from the metal of her blade as it was smacked spinning from her hand. It twisted lazily through the air and clattered among the wreckage. She blinked dizzily, as though she couldn't quite understand why she was still alive, then crumpled to the floor. Mace turned toward where the sound had come from. Sitting next to the corpse of a dead ACK guard, his back propped against the wall, one hand pressed to his chest to hold closed a horrible wound, Nick Rostu grinned past the smoking barrel of the pistol in his other hand.
Told you.
Nick.
Told you I could shoot, he said. His fingers opened, and the gun fell to the floor. His hand dropped on top of it, and his eyes drifted shut.
Nick, I...
The young Corin was beyond hearing. Mace said softly,
Thank you.
He swayed. He had to put out a hand to the wrecked comm console to steady himself. The bunker had once again gone quiet and dark and full of death. Quiet, except for a low growl. The growl came from a black shape that rose like corpse fungus from among the bodies.
So, Doshalo, here we are, for the last time.
Perhaps. The shape smote with power, more power than Mace had ever felt. The shadow beckoned.
Come on then, jungle rules.
On the contrary, Mace said slowly, Jedi rules.
What are Jedi rules?
You don't need to know, Mace told him. You're not a Jedi. Vibro shields whine to life.
I am waiting for you, Jedi of the Windu.
Mace extended a hand, and his lightsaber founded. He stood waiting.
You fear to attack me.
Jedi do not fear, Mace said, and we do not attack. The dark shape came closer. Carr, listen to me. The starfighters have been ordered off. The city will stand. They've surrendered to the Republic. We have no reason to fight. Do you understand?
Men like us are our own reason.
Mace shook his head. This isn't a big dog thing. If I must, I will hurt you. Badly.
You can't bluff me.
No, but I can kill you. Though I would rather not.
More Jedi rules.
Mace sagged. Do you have a move to make? I'm too tired for this.
Sleep when you're dead.
Vaster snarled and leapt. Ultrachrome flashed. Mace could have met him, blade to shields, but instead he slipped aside. As Vaster gathered himself to spring again, Mace reached into the Force. The vibro shield stuck into the wall above Nick's head squealed against the bunker's armor as it came to life and pulled itself free and streaked like a missile toward Vaster's back. Vaster's incredible reflexes whirled him, and those same reflexes snapped his shields in front of his chest in plenty of time to block. But of course, they didn't actually block anything. The flying shield's vibrating edge sheared through both Vaster's shields, through both his wrists, and buried itself in the bone of his chest, stopping less than a centimeter short of his heart. Vaster blinked astonishment at Mace, as though the Jedi Master had betrayed him. Mace Windu said, You were warned. Vaster's head shook weakly, suddenly palsied. He dropped to his knees.
You've killed me.
He sounded like he couldn't make himself believe it.
No, Mace said. That's another of the Jedi rules. Killing you is not the answer for your crimes. You're going back to Coruscant. You're going to stand trial.
Vaster swayed. His gaze went blank and blind.
Carr Vaster, said Mace Windu. You are under arrest.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Shatterpoint by Matthew Woodring Stover. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Shatterpoint is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2003. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams.
Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2003, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.